Chapter 10. The Undying King. Nagashizar, the Silent City. Far as Thorm passed beneath a broken archway of black stone, encrusted with skull-like barnacles. Will-o'-the-wisps danced across the barnacles, casting a pallid glow over the path ahead. As he walked, Nagashizar twisted and bent around him, like a shroud caught in a fierce wind. Every street and boulevard was a ripple, an undulation rising or sinking to reveal new mustering grounds, new tombs, new citadels of necessity. "Nagashizar is vast," Arkan said, as if reading his thoughts. The lich strode easily alongside him. Despite everything, Faris was beginning to find Arkan strangely companionable. "It swells like the night ocean, receding as the dawn breaks. Our gates spill forth upon every land. Our towers spy every border. The desert around us is every desert in the realm. We are a single moment, a last breath, held and stretched into infinity. Sigmaron is much the same." "Do you remember Sigmaron, then?" Arkan looked at him. Faris scraped the flat planes of his memory. "I remember golden towers and the light. So much light. Starlight, moonlight, sunlight." He shook his head. "It is as if those memories belong to another man." "What else do you recall?" Faris was silent for a moment.
"The taste of apples."
Arkan turned away with a rattling sigh. "Ah, a good memory. I have not tasted food or drink in time out of mind. I have lost even the memory of such memories. Hold fast to it, Faris Thorm, and remember who deprived you of such simple, impossible pleasures." Faris did not reply. Around them, ancient vaults creaked open, disgorging death-rattle legions to march in silent lockstep to mustering fields scattered across the city. Primeval cisterns were uncapped, unleashing wailing tempests of night-haunt spirits, long bound in darkness, but free now to take their vengeance on the living. These spirits swirled up into the air over the city, joining the storm of souls that was ever growing there. As the dead spilled into the sky, the winds picked up, casting sand and shards of shade glass everywhere. A living mortal would have been blinded in moments, and flayed to the bone a few seconds later. For Faris, clad in his new warplate, it was no more disconcerting than a summer rain. He looked down at himself. Rather than the hammer and lightning sigils of Azir that he kept half expecting, the warplate bore the morbid heraldry of some long-vanished city-state of Shaiish. A stylized hourglass occupied the center of his chest plate. Crossed scythes marked the backs of his gauntlets, and heavy chains draped his shoulders and torso like a sash. His helm was a skull, topped by great curving antlers of bone, and the cheek guard swept back into batwing shapes. Thick robes, stained with grave matter, draped his limbs and lower body. Though when his concentration lapsed, both seemed no more substantial than smoke.
"This armor, it does something to me."
"It suits you," Arkan said. "Then it was made for one of your kind. A cage and crown, both."
He paused.
"Your head is clearer now, I trust. You have control over yourself. That is good. Otherwise, you would be little more use than these broken things."
He gestured to a flood of spirits swirling upwards nearby, howling their fury. The chain rasps were spiteful things, broken by Nagash's will, their forms dictated by the circumstances of their death, and they surrounded him and Arkan in a dolorous tempest, whispering and wailing. They struck the walls like water, spreading and spilling to the ground. They crawled towards him in jerky fashion, begging for absolution or demanding vengeance. A part of him felt revulsion at the sight of them, but another part felt a strange sort of kinship with the tormented souls.
"So many," he said.
"There are more dead in Shaiish than the living can comprehend," Arkan said, as they paused to allow a ghostly black coach to thunder past.
The fleshless steeds that drew it snorted amethyst fire, and the driver was a shapeless thing, clad in rags and laughing wildly.
"Even the stones here have their ghosts, even the trees,"
he gestured, and Farah saw what he at first took to be a grove of skeletal trees, rising from among the crumbled temples. When one of them turned to look at him, he realized his mistake.
"Sylvaneth," he said, drawing the word from memory.
"Of sorts. The Ever-Queen has first claim on what passes for their souls. But some sought a different lord, in the days when she turned her face from the realms. As her song faded, they heard a different, more pleasing melody."
The ghostly tree spirits lurched silently past them, lumbering through the ruins, their bare branches shaking in the wind. Their features were jagged masks of ravaged bark, and their eyes burned with a terrible light. As they drew close, Farah thought he heard a shrill keening on the wind. The sound was at once joyful and despairing. That sound, or something like it, echoed throughout Nagash'azar. Every laugh was tinged with sorrow, every sigh with melancholy. Great funerary bells rang in the depths, and the dead shuffled from their centuried slumber and once more took up the devices of war. Chariots, coaches, and hooves rattled along the avenues as the kings and queens of forgotten bloodlines arrived to make their obeisance before Nagash. Flocks of carrion birds swirled through the storm of souls, or else perched on the high towers, croaking out Nagash's name. Jackals prowled the alleys, their eyes glowing amethyst. Farah felt a great sense of anticipation building in him. He was at once cold and hot, hungry for something he could not put into words. His gauntlets creaked as he clenched and loosened his hands in strange expectation.
"What is that sound? Can you hear it?"
"All dead things hear it. Nagash calls to you, on the wind and in your bones."
Farah twitched, feeling a sudden need, an urge, to turn and walk until he was commanded to stop. He could not resist it and did not wish to.
"I am hungry," he said,
his voice no more than a whisper.
"Thirsty. It hurts."
Not as bad as it had, though. The war plate he wore might be a cage, but it kept the pain at bay. Even so, he could still feel the storm surging within him, seeking escape. He traced the hourglass shape on his chest plate.
"It will grow worse. Pain is the price we pay to serve the great work. Even Nagash feels it, and your pain is but a shadow of his own. Remember that, Farah Thorm. Remember that you are but a shadow of the Undying King, a part of him now and forevermore. When he reaches out, it is with a thousand hands, and you are one of them."
"Yes."
The word felt wrong somehow. Farah's hand fell to the sword now belted at his waist in a sheath of rotting leather. It was a wide blade, meant for brute strength rather than finesse. Its hilt had been carved from a femur, and its crosspiece was made from the fangs of some large beast. Both the blade and the hourglass pommel had been made from some sort of dark, impossibly hard crystal. Shade glass, Arkan had called it.
It seemed to flex in eagerness as he gripped the hilt, and the sands in the hourglass hissed weirdly. He hesitated, feeling the malignant hunger roiling within the deceptively crude weapon. The weapon longed to part flesh and gorge itself on the final moments of the dying, and part of him longed to allow it to do so. He realized Arkan was watching him.
"You understand now, I think," the lich said.
"I understand nothing. I know nothing. But I..." Faris hesitated. "It does not seem so important to know, as it did earlier."
He flexed his gauntlets, watching the haze of his substance flicker through the gaps in the iron plates. For a moment he wondered if he was no more than a memory of who he had been. He felt a spark of anger flicker within him. Before it could ignite, Arkan said,
"You have been remade, and all useless parts of you have been cast aside. If you have questions, it means he wishes you to ask them."
"Will he send me against Azir?"
"Do you wish him to do so?"
"What I wish is not important."
"Good. You are learning."
Arkan sounded pleased.
"Yes, I remember more of who I was. What I was."
Faris looked at him.
"I also remember that you are the reason that Nagash spared me. He wished to destroy me, but you did not. Why?"
Arkan glanced at him.
"Tell me, what do you know of Nagash?"
Faris hesitated.
"He is all."
What else was there to know? Nagash was the sum totality of all things. All things were one in him. Or so the voice beating in his brain insisted with monotonous rhythm. Arkan extended his staff.
"Look to the east. What do you see?"
Faris looked and saw an unlight, a black sun squirming against the dark curtain of the sky. It boiled and burned amid the ruins, eating away at the world around it. It swelled and receded with the voice in his head, and he found himself unable to look away. Vastation built in him, purging his lingering uncertainties.
"Nagash is the black sun, the true sun's shadow and twin," Arkan said. "As Sigma holds the sky suspended, so too does Nagash draw down the earth. They move in eternal opposition, pushing against one another."
"I do not understand."
Arkan's teeth clicked in what might have been an expression of amusement.
"In some ancient texts, the black sun illuminates the truth of the soul. Nagash is the totality of truth, an absence of all lies, even the most comforting. He is the black sun, burning in an inverted sky. He is the truth, and Sigma the lie. Sigma is a husk filled with falsehood. He demands much and gives little in return. Nagash at least offers justice."
"Justice," Faris echoed. He looked down at himself. "Is this justice?"
Arkan laughed.
"This is Nagash's Ar, the place of final justice."
He stopped and thumped the ground with his staff.
"We are here."
They had come to a long avenue that stretched eastwards, towards the black sun. It had been cleared of much of the rubble, but work gangs of skeletons still toiled along the edges. Clusters of bodiless spirits, chain rasps and flickerhorns, galarks and lane hags, scregs and flay braggarts, masses of drifting, moaning spectres, bunched and floated through the ruins to either side, responding to the same call that drew Faris.
What is this place? Varus asked.
We approach the base of the Black Pyramid. Here, the Undying King has set his throne, so that he might receive the oaths of fealty owed him by his most loyal servants.
Arkan turned west, towards the closest end of the avenue.
There, see, three of the most prominent come now, to kneel at the Undying King's feet. At their head comes Vorgan Malandrek, the Knight of Shrouds.
A silent host of deathly riders paraded down the avenue, past Pharus and Arkan. At their head was a towering figure, darkly magnificent, balefire bleeding from his eyes, wrapped in spectral shrouds. He wore a black iron helm, topped by great curving bat wings, and bore a fine sword belted to his hip, an hourglass set into the hilt.
Like you, Malandrek once served the God King, Arkan said, and like you, he has seen the truth of Sigmar's perfidy.
He sounded almost amused. He pointed.
And there, Krellis Arul, the Lady of All Flesh.
Behind Malandrek's night-haunt riders came a shuffling tide of rotting flesh. The dead walkers moved with no grace or precision, stumbling along like confused livestock. The greatest mass of them bore upon their backs and shoulders a palanquin made from bone and raw, bloody flesh. The woman seated atop the hideous palanquin was draped in rotting and stained finery as of ancient days, her features hidden behind a crudely stitched leather mask. Two great dire wolves, their rib cages showing through tattered fur, and their skulls bare to the moonlight, crouched to either side of her. Occasionally she stroked one or the other of them, as if they were living things. She raised a crumbling hand as if in greeting, and Arkan returned the gesture. Then he turned and lifted his staff.
And last, but not least, save perhaps in his own mind, Grand Prince Yaros, Lord Rattlebone.
The death rattle warriors who brought up the rear of the column marched as one, in perfect synchronization. They bore heavy kite shields and long spears, to which had been affixed rotted pennants. Archaic armor sheathed the brown bones, and the rhythmic clamor of their passing was all but deafening. At their head rode a princely figure, wearing a battered crown of iron and a cloak of dusty fur. The Death Rattle King rode a skeletal steed and had a single-bladed axe balanced across his saddle. He lifted the axe in salute as he passed.
Three lords of death come to serve he who forged them.
Where are they going? Arkan silently extended his staff east. Pharus turned. Dust clouds rolled across the far end of the avenue, momentarily blotting the black sun from sight. When they cleared, Pharus saw, at the far end of the avenue, an immense structure of black shade glass. It resembled a dais, but was leagues across and surmounted by a towering throne, taller than any gargant, and circled by flocks of carrion birds. A great figure reclined atop the throne, and Pharus recognized the being who had remade him. Nagash. Unspoken, the name echoed through him regardless, down into the hollows of his spirit. The confusion he felt, the doubt and anger, it vanished all in an instant. The storm in him subsided like a startled beast. Hoarfrost crept suddenly across the panes of his armor, and he felt a chill digging into the marrow of his non-existent bones. Cries echoed up around him, so many as to occasionally merge into a single great howl. He stepped back as something that might have been fear stirred in him. The Undying King sat on his throne, amid a slow typhoon of souls swirling about him in desperate celebration. Broken skeletons crawling along the avenue reached out to the distant figure as if in supplication. Faris felt the pull himself, impossible to ignore or defy. It was as if there were a great weight pressing down on him and pulling him all at once. Somehow, all things bent towards Nagash, even the winds and the light of the distant stars. It was as if he were a hole in the realm, and all that existed fell into him to be lost forevermore. He groaned and looked away, unable to bear such awful majesty for long.
"He is all, and all are one in him," Arkan said. "Do not resist. Let the silence of him fill you and smother all doubt in its cradle."
"I hear something," Faris cradled his head. "Like a swarm of insects rattling in my skull."
He twitched, trying to escape the sound.
"Is that him?"
Arkan gave a rattling laugh.
"Come, he calls to you, and you must answer."
He stepped onto the avenue, and Faris followed. The spirits that huddled along either side set up a great wailing, which Faris thought must be akin to applause. 100,000 souls clustered among the ruins. Some were nothing more than bobbing motes of witchlight, while others seemed almost alive, save for their pallor. More souls drifted down like ash from above, falling towards Nagash-Izzar from the dark skies. Some of these joined the throng that lined the avenue, while others were caught by the wind and whisked away, trailing despairing moans in their wake.
"Where are they all coming from?" Faris asked.
"Everywhere and nowhere. Wherever a mortal story begins, it ends here. And here is where all men must eventually come. Some will stay in Nagash-Izzar, caught fast by their crimes. Others will pass through the sepulchral gate and into whatever underworld calls them home. As it is inscribed there, by the manner of their death shall ye know them."
The avenue quickly became crowded by swaying deadwalkers and eerily still death-rattle warriors. They made their way for Arkan, their ranks shuffling aside as if shoved back by invisible hands. Arkan led Faris through them, towards the great dais at the end of the avenue, where Malandrek and the other Death Lords stood waiting for the word of Nagash. Faris felt their gazes on him as he approached, and he wondered what they made of him. Yaros seemed as stoic as any skeleton, the hollow sockets of his eyes burning dimly. Arul, the Lady of All Flesh, greeted them softly, her voice a liquid slur.
"Lord Arkan, it has been too long since you have visited my charnel gardens. They wax vibrant these days."
She held out a mouldering hand, and Arkan took it with courtly aplomb. His fleshless jaws brushed across her bruised knuckles.
"I am sure their fragrance is as potent as ever, my lady."
Her flat, milky eyes fixed on Faris.
"And who is this handsome spirit? He wears the raiment of a Death Lord, and yet I do not know him."
She held out her hand to Faris. He hesitated, but only for a moment. He took it and bent. Had he been alive, he thought the stench of her would have choked him. She was a dead thing and stank of rot.
"He is called Faris Thorm, and he is newly made," Arkan said.
"Ah, a new soul. How charming."
She reached up and traced crumbling fingers across the side of Faris's helm.
"He smells of lightning."
Malandrek stirred. The burning slits of his eyes, visible within his helm, narrowed.
"What game are you playing, Mortark?" he rasped. The glory to come will be mine and no others. Certainly not any pet of yours.
Arkan turned.
Remember to whom you speak, Knight of Shrouds. You are not so high in our Lord's esteem that I cannot rend you asunder and reweave your soul into a more fitting shape.
Malandrek drew himself up, one hand falling to the hilt of his blade.
Careful, Black One, he said. You serve as his hand for the moment, but there are worthier souls in creation.
Arkan laughed. Your ambition is admirable, though wasted, Knight of Shrouds. If you wish to supersede me, you must get in line. Be warned, though, I am told it is quite lengthy.
Malandrek hissed.
Speak, then! Who is this, some broken lich of your circle?
He looked at Pharus.
Aral is right. He stinks of lightning.
He laughed suddenly.
Wait, I know him now. Pharus Thorm, guardian of the dark places, one of Sigmar's revenants, another who received the blessings meant for me. And now you are here. The wheel of fate surely turns in strange directions.
Pharus gazed at him in incomprehension. Did we know each other? Something in the creature's words stoked the storm in him. Amethyst lightning sparked and crawled across the gaps in his armor. Malandrek's eyes blazed bright as his pale hand fell to the hilt of his blade.
We fought side by side against the Soul Blight warlord Vasselbad in Glimsforge.
What was your name?
You know my name. I was the commander of the Southernmost Gate, the slayer of the Slender Knight. I was a hero.
Bitterness swelled in the dead man's voice. There was naked longing there, a desire now impossible to fulfill.
I do not recall you, Pharus said. Then, more maliciously, perhaps you are not as important as you claim.
He was surprised by his own venom and the pleasure he took in saying the words. Malandrek shrieked and made to draw his blade. Arkan stepped between them, his eyes glowing with a witchlight greater than Malandrek's own.
Will you strike a servant of your master without cause?
He slammed his staff down, and amethyst fires sprang up.
Are you a living man to let hot anger stir your turgid blood?
Malandrek snarled curses. Pharus reached for his own blade, but a glance from Arkan stopped him.
Cease,
the Mortark of Sacrament intoned. Malandrek drifted back and glared at them. Before he could speak, Yaros gave a dusty chuckle. The White King stood nearby, watching the confrontation.
One more pawn, or one less, the game is set already. And the true winner sits there, watching us play at influence.
He raised his axe.
Hail, Nagash! Hail, O Undying King!
Pharus turned. Nagash was indeed watching them, slumped on his throne, his talons pressed together in a steeple before his bowed head. The Undying King sat as if engaged in some inconceivable calculation. Spirits writhed about him, whispering and singing hymns to his might and mercy. Massive skeletal Morghasts crouched to either side of his throne, their cruel glaives held ready to defend their master. Nagash flicked a finger, and what Pharus had at first taken to be a pile of bones and rags heaped on the wide, rough-hewn steps of the dais rose awkwardly to its feet. Aral clapped her hands gently.
Oh, how delightful! He has resurrected dear old bladder bones to amuse us. It has been so long.
Bloodabones proved to be a tatterdemalion of color and injury, a court jester, clad in rotting costume and dented bells. He twitched up and bowed low.
Greetings, gentles all, he shrilled in a childish voice. Our king welcomes you to his hall. See there, the stars shine through the holes in the roof, and the dead sweep away the dust on the floor.
He flung up a broken hand and spun in a madcap circle, jaw sagging.
He strives, oh, he strove, to make it pretty for you.
Dance, jester, Nagash intoned.
At his words, the jester capered in awkward circles, as the carrion birds that circled Nagash's throne pecked at him. His ragged costume was sewn to his mouldering flesh, and bare bone poked through his peeling features. Despite the state of him, he seemed in good humor. He bounced and spun, moving more swiftly than any dead thing ought, and the tarnished bells attached to his costume jangled piercingly. As he whirled, he sang without melody.
Our king is kind, so kind, and he will take what grows in every creature's womb and make it his own, the jester screeched. He will make every house a tomb, and as his great hand sweeps across the sea, all the fish will rise with their bellies up. The jackals bow to him, and the birds as well.
He batted at the birds as they dived for what remained of his eyes. Jackals darted through the ranks of the dead and snapped at his flailing limbs.
He leaves a trail of fire across the desert, so that all who seek him might find their way. Rejoice! Rejoice! The undying king is come again in all his glory.
Pharus felt no horror, no disgust at the display, though he knew he ought to. Only curiosity. Was there some message in the jester's song, or was it merely gibberish? The question vanished from his mind as Nagash gestured once more, and the jester began to twirl faster and faster. He careened from one side to the other, losing bits of himself as he danced.
Rejoice! Rejoice! He is all, and we are him, and all are one! Rejoice!
With a final despairing ululation, the jester collapsed into a heap. Light still burned in the sockets of his skull, but his song was finished. Jackals worried at his carcass, snarling and fighting with one another. Nagash gazed down at the remains in silence.
Behold, he intoned, in a voice like the grinding of stone. I am risen.
He looked up, and his burning gaze swept across the ranks arrayed before him. As one, the dead sank to their knees. Pharus found himself drawn down with the others, unable to resist the unspoken command. Like the jester, they moved as the undying king willed. Nagash stood.
I cast forth my hand, and the trees raise up their roots.
He threw out a talon, and great roots, colorless and sickly-looking, erupted from beneath the avenue with a rumble and a roar. They rose high, coiling about nearby pillars, stretching towards the dark sky. Twisted faces blossomed on the pallid bark like fungus. They wailed, some cursed Nagash's name, while others begged for mercy. Pharus looked away.
Where I set my foot, the earth buckles, Nagash continued.
He stepped down onto the steps of the dais, and the stone cracked loudly. Dust geezered as he descended, and the ground shook.
My gaze boils the sea, and my voice calls down the stars. I am risen, and all is silence.
The words echoed from the pillars. Nagash gestured.
Arkan, come forth and attend me, my most faithful servant. I am at your command, my lord, as ever, Arkan called out as he strode towards the steps leading up to the dais. But speak, and I shall move the realms themselves. He climbed to stand beside Nagash. The lich looked tiny next to his towering master.
There is no need, my servant, for I have already done so. I have realigned the heavens themselves.
Nagash looked down, his flickering gaze fixing on Faris for a moment, before sliding back to Arkan.
Is this all, then? Am I abandoned by my servants?
Never, my lord. 1,000 wars are waged even now in your name. 100 Death Lords march across the amethyst sands, traveling from the north, the east, and the south. Spirit, bone, and meat answer your call.
And my Mortarks?
Arkan set his staff and rolled his shoulders in an elegant shrug.
They go where they will and kill where they wish, as you made them to do, my lord. Rest assured they have tendered their apologies for their absence and assure you that they strive ever in your mighty name. They build empires to your glory, O undying king.
Nagash gave a rumbling laugh.
I am sure that is what they say.
He gestured dismissively.
No matter. The vagaries of the soul blighted do not interest me this day. I seek to raise up new champions and conquer old lands.
He looked out over the gathered dead.
The time has come. Shaiish must be cleansed. All who do not kneel before me must be made to do so. As it once was, so shall it be again, forevermore. Stand forth, my Knight of Shrouds.
Malandrek drifted forwards silently. Nagash stretched out his hand.
You sought my favor, Vorgan Malandrek, and thus I have bestowed it. I have made you more than you were, and raised you up so that you might take vengeance for yourself upon those who used you so cruelly. Will you do this for me, my servant?
Speak the name, my lord, and I shall cast them into ruin,
Malandrek said, in a voice like the cawing of many birds. Faris thought he detected a note of eagerness in the ghostly warrior's tone, as if he already knew what Nagash intended to ask of him.
Grimsforge, Nagash said.
Malandrek gave a lingering sigh. Nagash gestured.
The way is already open. A gap in the defenses. Use it. Crack the city wide and reclaim it and the underworld of Lyria for me.
Nagash looked at the others.
Krellis Arul and Yaros of Domesny. You shall serve my champion in this. Aid him. Break the city. Glory awaits.
For a moment, Faris thought one or the other might protest, being subordinated to the ghostly warrior, but neither did. The hierarchy of the dead was set, it seemed. Spirit, bone, and then meat.
And what of your newest servant, my lord? Arkan asked.
He gestured to Faris.
One once of Aziz heights, now of Shaiish's depths. What task shall he be bent to?
Nagash turned his lamp-like gaze upon Faris once more. For long moments he stared, as if puzzled by the presence of the being before him. Finally, he looked at Arkan.
By your whim was I encouraged to show mercy. Thus to your whim I yoke him. Let him prove himself worthy of my mercy, howsoever you see fit, my loyal Mortark. And if he should fail, you shall bear the brunt of my ire.
Arkan bowed low. As you command, so must it be, my lord. Nagash returned to his throne, and the audience came to an end. The other Death Lords turned away to depart, though not without a few backward looks and a glare from Malandrek. Faris wondered if he'd made an enemy there, and what it meant. He waited, uncertain, as Arkan descended the steps of the dais. If a skeleton could look pleased, Arkan did so. Nagash, for his part, looked neither pleased nor pensive. The fleshless rictus of the Undying King's features did not change, as he sank back onto his throne in a clamoring of armor and bone. Carrion birds circled him and swooped down to perch on his shoulders and knees. They set up a raucous chorus, screeching and cawing, as if advising the god of some mischief elsewhere. The jackals began to howl, casting their eerie song to the wind. Faris stared up at Nagash and knew somehow that the god did not notice him. It was as if, having delivered his commands, his mind had withdrawn to other spheres. Arkan confirmed this a moment later.
Shaiish stirs, and so the reaper must ready his scythe, the lich said as he joined Faris. You and the others will be its edge, and Glim's forge the harvest.
I cannot feel him anymore. My head feels empty.
Faris touched his helm.
I feel empty. He is silent.
He wanted to hear that awful voice again, to feel it resonate within him. It drove out all fear and worry and crushed doubt and uncertainty.
Fear not, Faris. He is with you always. He is hidden within even the deepest of your thoughts and in the hollows of your soul. What you see, he sees. What you feel, he feels. You are his hands and eyes and mouth. Even when you think yourself alone, he is there.
Arkan caught him by the shoulder.
This god will not abandon you, Faris. That I swear to you.
Faris looked at Arkan's hand and felt the crackle of the lightning raging inside him. As if sensing this, Arkan stepped back.
You were a jailer once. Do you recall this?
Yes.
Faris dredged the slow currents of his memory.
The 10,000 tombs. Beneath Glim's forge, I guarded them.
The words came with difficulty and only brought more questions. Like sand, the memories sifted through his fingers, no matter how tightly he grasped at them.
Yes. And now you will crack open the prison you built and free those within.
Arkan studied him, his gaze revealing nothing.
10,000 souls entombed by my hand in the waning days of the Age of Myth. I had done so many times before and since to aid my lord and master. I would see these awakened. They will prove the undoing of the false city, and shall march through the Shimmer Gate, with you at their head. You will be a sword thrust into the heart of Azir.
He clenched a fist.
Thus Nagash has commanded, and thus it will be done.